Morning. Today's Daf Nechulin Samach Vav. We're on the top of Samach Vav Amid Aleph, finishing up our discussion on grasshoppers from yesterday's Daf, and then moving on to fish. So today, very simple Daf to summarize: grasshoppers, followed then by fish. What do we know regarding grasshoppers? Some of them are kosher. The Torah enumerates four different types of grasshoppers that are kosher. Not only that, the Torah, in addition to enumerating the kosher grasshoppers, also gives us the characteristics in which we can discover new and exciting grasshoppers to eat. So we already know this back on our Mishnah. The Mishnah back on Nun Tes Amud Aleph already told us what the four characteristics are regarding the grasshoppers. The Torah itself gives us some of the characteristics, but the truth of the matter is that through the Torah Shabbat Peh and the comparison of the four grasshoppers, the examples that are given in the Torah, so we know what the four characteristics are of a kosher grasshopper. It has to have four legs, two jumping legs, four wings, and the wings covering the majority of their body. So those are the characteristics. There is a shita in the Mishnah of Rav Yossi that has to be also Shmo Chagav. It has to be called a Chagav as well. So what exactly does that mean? It has to be under the general genre, under the genus of Chagav. But after that, not totally clear exactly what that means. But nevertheless, that is the basic defining characteristics of a grasshopper. Yesterday, we went through two brises. We went through a Sifra de Beirav, or otherwise known as Toras Kohanim. The Toras Kohanim that was quoted were operated and understood the Pesukim using the methodology of Klal Uprat. And then we had a second brice of Rabbi Shmuel. And the brice of Rabbi Shmuel learned out the Pesukim based on Klal Uprat Uklal. What became the difference between the two of them? So basically, at the conclusion of the Sugya, which we got to yesterday, on the very top of Samach Vav Amud Aleph, so that was the Gemara's question, what's the practical difference between the Braisa of Sifra de Beirav versus the Toras Kohanim? And the answer was, basically, we have as follows. There are four grasshoppers mentioned in total, but really three for comparative purposes. The last of the four grasshoppers mentioned in the Torah is the Chagav, and quite frankly, the Chagav, that's just more of a genus description. That's the general grasshopper family. But as far as the three examples that are concerned, so they are the Arbeh, the Sal'am, and the Chargol. And what we learn from those three is as long as the grasshopper shares its general characteristics, so then it would be kosher. Now, of those three, of course, it's hard for us to identify any one of those three. But of those three, however, as we pointed out yesterday, some have a tail, some don't have a tail. Some have antennas on its head, some don't have antennas on its head. And so therefore, clearly, those characteristics are non-essential characteristics in terms of establishing kashrus. However, something like an elongated head, some grasshoppers have it, some grasshoppers don't. But of the three mentioned in the Torah, so none of them have an elongated head. All their heads are roundish in shape. And so therefore, one can make the argument that if a grasshopper has an elongated head, it's not going to be a kosher grasshopper. That, in fact, is the opinion of Tana de Beirav. The Sifra de Beirav is of the opinion that because we're understanding the Pesukim based on Klal Uprat, so in order for a grasshopper to be kosher, it must mimic exactly like one of the grasshoppers mentioned in the Torah, the Arbeh, the Chargol, and the Sal'am. And since none of them have an elongated head, therefore a grasshopper with an elongated head is no good, it's not kosher. Masha Ein Kein, according to Tana de Beirav Yishmael, who understands the drasha based on klal part of klal, it doesn't have to have exactly these characteristics. It just has to have the shared characteristics. So as long as it has four legs, two jumping legs, four wings, the wings covering the majority of its body, it would in fact be a kosher grasshopper. And an elongated head versus a roundish head is not a defining feature of kashrus. That would be according to Tana de Beirav Yishmael. And the Gemara noted that is exactly the difference between the two brises. So the nafkamina would be the grasshopper with the elongated head. Continuing where we left off yesterday, the next part of the Gemara we did also. How exactly do we learn it out based on these three? It's the extra sal'am. Okay, we did that yesterday. We pick it up right where we left off yesterday. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. They absolutely ate it. There are numerous Gemaras that indicate that they ate grasshoppers. Bismana Gemara. Okay. Protein. Okay. Sorry, just figuring out where we left off yesterday. Thank you. Perfect. Okay, where are we picking it up? Where we left off yesterday in Samech Vav Amud Aleph. It is about 10 lines from the top of the Amud. The first word on the line is Marbe, called the Damile Bechatzad. The Gemara's question over here is as follows. V'halo Dami Klali Kamala Klali Basra. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. According to Tanna Dei Rav Yishmael, so the formula, the Mida, that we're going to be using in order to darshan is Klal Prado Klal. Now, Klal Prado Klal in English translates as a generality, followed then by specific or specifics, then followed by the generality. Now, in order for that to be bracketing the specifics, the first and the last klal have to be comparable with one another. And if they don't, if they're not operating with the same basic idea, we don't have klal part of klal. It's basically like an open and a closed parentheses, meaning so that in order to recognize and identify that we're in the parentheses right now, we have to clearly see the two of them working in coordination with one another. If the klal kama and the klal basral are not working in coordination with one another, we don't have a klal prado klal. And the Gemara now points out, doesn't seem like that we have a klal prado klal. Why? Because klal kama asher lo kirayim amrachmana de islechol de islelo sechol. Because consider, what is the klal kama telling us? It has to have legs. So that means to say, we are focusing on the features it does have, and if it doesn't have those features, it's no good. Klal Basra adeshava barba simanim. And the Klal Basra is saying it has to have all four of these features. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. They're not really, the two Klalim are not really sharing the same point or the same goal. And as a result of that, it doesn't really qualify as Klal Prado Klal. To which the Gemara says, listen, this particular point about Klal Prado Klal is not unanimously agreed upon. Some are more flexible in terms of darshan and klal prado klal, and of those people who are flexible, you know who happens to be one of them? Rabbi Yishmael. And the Gemara now comments, Tan debe Rabbi Yishmael b'chalu prate ki haigavna da'in. Rabbi Yishmael happens to be a little bit looser in terms of what looks like a klal, in terms of putting the first and the last klalim together in order to generate a klal uprat uklal. And the Gemara says, and I'll tell you from this point going forward, after having learned Chulin, Daf Samech Vav Amud Aleph, Uda Amrina Nami Ba'alma, Dida'in, and whenever you see in general somebody who is looser in his standards of how to judge a klal apart a klal, now you know, Tana Debe Ravi Shmal, Bechalu Prati Ki Agavna Mahacha, this is it. This is the source that tells us that, according to Rabbi Yishmael, the klal kama and the klal basra don't have to be exactly the same. They don't have to be operating on the exact same plane. And nevertheless, as long as it's a general generality in the beginning and a general generality at the end, it serves as a klal prado klal. The Gemara, one more follow-up question to the grasshopper discussion. Amar Mar, Ishma Chagav, Yachol Ein Bo, Kol Hasimanim Halalu, Tamalamar Lemineu, Ashi Bo, Kol Hasimanim Halalu. So the Gemara over here operates with a Havamina. You know, at the very end of the list, we had the Chagav, and as we already discussed, the Chagav is not a specific type of grasshopper, but it's a general family of grasshoppers. And the Gemara says, you know, we had a Havamina, for a moment we're going to entertain, that as long as it's Shmo Chagav, even if it doesn't share the common characteristics, it would be a kosher grasshopper. So the Gemara says, that's a funny Havamina. The Gemara says, where did we even have such a Havamina? Arbe v'chargol ksiv. So the Torah says arbe v'chargol, meaning clearly the examples given in the Torah are sharing the four common characteristics of a kosher grasshopper. And now at the tail end of the Braisa, we entertain for a moment that as long as it's chagav, that's enough. It's not enough. So the Gemara says, look, ilok kasav salam kidekamart. The Gemara says, I tell you what, you're right that the Havamina is not a good Havamina if the Torah did not introduce us to the third grasshopper of Salam. Hashad dechsiv Salam l'rabuye rosh aruch ema lir b'nami kol dehu. But consider the point that we made at the end of yesterday's daf, at the top of our amud. Remember, if the Torah would have said arben chargol, sufficient. Arben chargol are two examples of grasshoppers is all we need. It gives us the four common characteristics of grasshoppers: four legs, two jumping legs, four wings, and the wings covering the majority of their body. They tell us that tail is not critical, because one has a tail, one doesn't. It tells us that the antennas of our head are not critical, because one has and one doesn't. So if the Torah would have given us just simply Arbe and Chargol, that would have been enough. And then what happened? Salam was included. Or, for my joke of the day, it was added to the hopper. And the, thank you very much. Thank you. So the, and Salam was added. And what did we learn from yesterday's daf? Or really at the top of our Amud? We learned that because the Torah added Salam, so therefore, even if it doesn't share all these characteristics, so let's say, for example, it has an elongated head. That's okay. So you see now that Salam is added when it wasn't necessary to add it. So now that would have been the fuel to the fire of our Hava Mina. Now we would have thought that because of the Salam, which is an extraneous grasshopper, I might have thought, you know what? It doesn't even need to have the four common characteristics. It would be sufficient if it were simply called Chagav. So Kamash Malan. Now that we have the Hava Mina, now we need the Maskana. And what's the Maskana? Because the Torah says, Leminehu. So therefore, we arrive at the conclusion that it is a that it has to have the four common characteristics. Maishna Hasam Damar Salam Zed Dishon Chagol Zenipol. Umaishna Hacha Damar Salam Zenipol Chargeze Rashon. And the Gemara now has one last follow-up question to all this. Again, we go back to yesterday's daf, and we go back to the two brises. Tana Debei Rav, that's the Torah's Kohanim, and Rabbi Shmuel. Now, I'm sure you noticed, tell you the truth, I didn't notice until the Gemara asked the question, and then I look back and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. Shameful admission, but it's true. So I'm sure you noticed that when each brisa was giving us the Aramaic term for every one of the four grasshoppers mentioned in the Torah, so the brisas switched it. So the Gemara says that the one brisa says that the Salam is the Rashon and the Chargol is the Nipol. And in the other brisa, it said the exact opposite, that the Salam is the Nipol and the Chargol is the Rishon. And so what just happened over there? And the Gemara says, Marki Asri, Marki Asri. So the Gemara says different communities and different grasshoppers went by different names in the different communities. Rashi's clear. Rashi says that we know what the Chargol is and we know what the Salam is, meaning that's objectively a particular grasshopper. It just happens to be that in various communities, one called it this name and the other one called it another name, but it's objectively the same grasshopper. One last point to make regarding grasshoppers before we close the door on grasshoppers, and that's Rashi. Rashi, at the very end of the entire sugya, after having gone through everything we just went through, so Rashi writes as follows. He says, grasshoppers, great. So let's enjoy them. Let's eat them. Do we need to shecht them before we eat them? So Rashi says, no, you don't. I just love the idea of the kind of knife you would need to fetch in order to shecht the grasshopper. Okay? The world's smallest shechita knife. But the good news is, says Rashi, don't worry about it. You're not going to need to get it because a grasshopper does not require shechita. And this part gets interesting. Rashi says, and how do I know that? So Rashi writes, I'm reading the Rashi inside. V'chagavim halalu, I'm in the Rashi, Dibra Amaskal Marki Asrei, right in the middle of the Rashi. So v'chagavim halalu, these grasshoppers ain't to an shechita, do not require shechita. Now Rashi, that part in of itself is not interesting, meaning those are facts on the table. What's interesting is Rashi is going to cite his source. How do I know that the grasshopper does not require shechita? Sharei acher dagim hiskiram akasov. Because look at the placement of the Torah. Now, I raised this question just the other day when going through the entire laws of kashrus. And if you look in the Torah has a really interesting way of presenting the animals. The first thing the Torah does is the Torah goes through the big animals. Then what the Torah does is the Torah then moves from animals to fish. Then after fish, then we go to birds. And then after birds, we go to the insects, otherwise known as the grasshoppers. Okay. So Rashi writes over here, so what's happening? So Rashi says, Share dagim hiskerim akasav zos toras habehema kemashma'o va'of kemashma'o of velo sheretz. Ha'ov dahinu minim kitanim v'chol nefesh ha'chaya ha'rameses b'mayim elu dagim. Ulechol nefesh ha'sharetz ha'aretz elu chagavim. So in other words, by virtue of the fact that, and it's not just, let me be even clearer over here. It's not just the order in which it's presented in the Torah, but it's the summary statement at the very end. Right, it's the last psukim or last pasuk, second to last pasuk. Zos Torah Sabeim Avaof Echol Nefesh Achayar Ameses Bamayim Ulechol Nefesh Asheretzes Ala Aretz. Thank you. Okay, it's the 46th pasuk of the perek, of Perek Yud Aleph. So we have Behema, followed then by Of, then Chol Nefesh Achayar Ameses Bamayim, aquatic creatures, and Lechol Nefesh Asheretzes Ala Aretz, grasshoppers. So by virtue of the fact that the Torah gives us specifically that particular order, so that means to say now that we know fish don't require shechita, and neither do grasshoppers. Because in the progression in the pasuk, grasshoppers come after fish. So, and Rashi says, and where is this coming from? Which Gemara is this coming from? Rashi says it's not coming from a Gemara. Rashi says at the very end, halachas gedolos, comes from the Bahag. Bahag, one of the Gaonim, one of the late Gaonim. So putting together all the halachas of the Torah, so the Bahag uses this pasuk as a way of observing that grasshoppers do not require shechita.
How do you kill them then?
How do you kill them?
Right?
I'm right.
Asking
Okay. In other words, you kill them before you eat them. In other words, that point is very well taken. But in terms of how to kill them, the Torah does not give instruction. You kill them in any manner. Now, Tosos over here, at the bottom of the Amud, is interested by the following. You know, there are numerous Gemaras out there that indicate that grasshoppers do not need to be shechted. And you can eat the grasshoppers without shechting. So it's interesting, he's not disagreeing with Rashi, full agreement with Rashi that grasshoppers do not require shechita, but it's a curiosity that Rashi is citing what as his source? He's citing the halachas gedolos. It's a gaon. It's one of the late gaonim. So what an unusual source to quote in terms of a primary source to teach us that does not require shechita. Besov Shmait, the Tosos writes, it's the bottom Tosos on the Amud, it's four lines down after the Dibra Maschel by Maika Miflegi. Good. So, I'm sorry, I didn't need to read all that, but he repeated what Rashi said. And Rashi's quoting the halachas gedolos as a primary source. Mm-hmm. So Tosus writes very interesting. But you know why Rashi liked the halachas gedolos? Because it takes us back to the psukim. Meaning the various gemaras, and by the way, I'm not going to go through it right now, but go through the Tosus afterwards. There are numerous gemaras that indicate that grasshoppers do not need to be shechted. And Tosus goes through a bunch of them. But as far as those Gemaras are not citing psukim and drashas, what the Bahag does over that of the Gemara, I don't know if it's a drasha more than just simply an observation of the pasuk, a diak in the pasuk, but it's wonderful. And so the reason why Rashi quoted the halachas gedolos as Tosos is because it takes us back to the psukim and it makes a diak in the psukim. It is interesting, by the way, now that I can go back to the Pesukim for just a moment, that although at the tail end, which is what Rashi is citing over here, Zos Torah Sabehema, but in the progression, in the Pesukim themselves, it's not so glot. Meaning, first the Torah tells us animals, then the Torah tells us, then the Torah introduces us to fish, then the Torah does birds, and then the Torah does the grasshoppers. So, in the way the Torah rolls out the animals, so it's not exactly the same as a summary statement at the end. Okay, fine. Fish. We move on to discuss the fish, and I think we're all familiar with the basic idea that for a kosher fish, it needs to have both fins and scales. That's a pasuk in the Torah, and which we're going to amplify. The end?
Why don't we say that? Dugim comes after oif, so just
just like an oif, you need
shechita. Okay, right. I'm saying that, right. Right, right, right. Good, good. That's right. That's the problem in which I raised. Okay, good. When it comes to fish, so the fact that the fish needs fins and scales, I think that's common. That's common knowledge. But what we're going to be learning on in the second half of today's daf is that not all the time there are aquatic animals that can have fins and scales that don't have fins and scales, and yet we're allowed to eat them. Stay tuned. That's coming up. Uva dugim kol sheish lo snapir v'kaskas. The Gemara quotes the Mishnah, and after that, Tanur Rabbanan, and we start with a brisa. The first brisa that we're going to be doing is going to be making a very straightforward point, and that is that the animal does not have to have fins and scales over the duration of its entire life. If it had scales at its earlier stages of development, or at its later stages of development, in either direction, it would be a kosher fish. Tanur Rabbanan ein lo achshav asi legadel lachrizman kegon hasultanis v'ha apian harizimuter. Yesh lo achshav asi lihashiram b'shashaola min amayim kegon akunas and apunas and kaspitias and achstapitias v'atunas. I apologize for all those pronunciations. I'm sure there's not one of them that I pronounced it correctly. Harizimuter, that also would be permissible. So basically now the life of the fish does not have to have scales on it from beginning to end, from the beginning of life to end, as long as at one point historically, or developmentally, I should say better, the fish have scales, it would in fact be a kosher fish. In terms of the identity of all these fish that the Gemara quoted over here, so Rashi tries and makes an attempt to give us some of the definitions of some of them. The Sultanus Rashi over here refers to as the tuna. Okay. Tunina. Okay. Again, only so much I can help you with. Tanan Hasam. A Mishnah in Nida. The Mishnah in Nida take us a little bit off course in terms of going over things that have two simanim, but the truth of the matter is one of the two is all you need. And the Mishnah in Nida over there turned its attention to fish. The Torah gives us two simanim by fish, fins and scales, and the Mishnah over there is going to report and record for us that the truth of the matter is every aquatic creature that has scales, by definition, is going to have fins. Kosher yesh lo kaskesis, yesh lo snapir. V'yesh yesh lo snapir, v'yesh lo kaskesis. So, yesh lo kaskesis, v'yesh lo snapir, dag tahor. Yesh lo snapir, v'yesh lo kaskesis, dag tameh. So the Mishnah in Nida tells us that even though the Torah gives us two simanim, really all we need to look for is one simon. Simply by virtue of the reality that every fish that's going to have scales, by definition, is going to have fins. The opposite, of course, is not true. Think of your shark. It's got fins, it's got no scales. So those fish that have scales are going to have fins. And to which now the Gemara is going to ask a wonderful question. Well, if that's true, so why would the Torah then have to give us two simanim? If all we need to do in order to record whether or not a fish is kosher or not, the Torah should just simply say scales and be done with it. Michti. Akaskeskes kasamchin lichtov rechmen akaskeses v'lo lichtov snapir. So why would the Torah then have to write kaskeses and snapir? Kaskeses are the scales and the snapir are the fins. And you wouldn't need to write both. E kas rechmen akaskeses v'lo kasov snapir hava amina mai kaskeses snapir. Therefore, kasav rechman is snapir v'kaskeses. So the Gemara's response is, well, look, these are terms that are not used throughout Tanakh. These are unusual terms. If the Torah would have just simply said kaskeses, I might have erroneously interpreted the Torah to mean that the word kaskeses is actually a reference to the fins. I know it's talking about some feature on the fish. I'm not really sure what kaskeses is. Oh, it must be the fins. By virtue of the fact that the Torah now writes both snapir and kaskeses, so therefore now I know I'm talking about two features, and so therefore would have had a better chance interpreting it correctly. Snapir is the fins, and the kaskeses are the scales. So the Gemara says, really? So the Gemara says, well, how do I know that kaskeses is scales altogether? And the truth of the matter is, although I said a moment ago, it's not that often you're going to see these words in Tanakh, but you're actually going to see them. V'siryon kaskesim hu lavush. When the Navi in Shmuel gives us a description of Galias, so it talks about his coat of armor. And the Torah and the Navi describes it as siryon kaskesim. Mm-hmm. So it was a coat of armor, like scales going over his body. And so clearly the Navi is telling us that the word kaskasim is a reference to the coat that covers and protects the outer surface. So now that I have that pasuk in the Navi, I go back to the Torah, and now I know. And I go back to my original question. Why does the Torah have to say kaskasim and snapir? Because of possible confusion? I know my Navi. I'm not talking about me personally. But I'm right. We know our Navi. And so once you know your Navi, so now you know the definition. And so therefore the Gemara repeats the question. So why then does it have to say snapir? It's not necessary. And the Gemara gives a really interesting answer. It's brief, it's succinct, and it doesn't seem to explain. Yagdol Torah v'yadir. Well, you know, the Torah is it increases, it amplifies, it glorifies. Huh? How does that respond to the question?
So the Torah was written before the
Navi. Well, that part's also true. So there's a short Tosus over here. Tosus writes Yagdol Torah v'yadir. Harbe amar lanu ta'amim le'damau kaskeses. So the way Tosus understands the Gemara's answer is, you're right, elu ve'elu, meaning that the Torah wants to give us more than one way to arrive at a conclusion. Meaning there is a point of conclusion. Good. Kaskasim, what does that mean? Well, there's a number of ways to arrive at it. One is that by virtue of the fact that the Torah gives us two terms to describe the fish, the snapir of a kaskasim. I know the snapir is the fins, and therefore the kaskasim is the scales. I also know the pasuk in Navi that describes the coat worn by Goliath in battle as the kaskasim. Oh, that's another way. Meaning, the way Tosus understands it is that there are multiple ways that the Torah allows us to arrive at a singular point, at a singular conclusion. That's the understanding of Yagdol Torah v'Yadir. Tanur Rabbanan. Mimashma shenemar echol. Now, in order to appreciate and understand the upcoming brisa, so let's go over the following. Twice in the Torah, meaning not twice, but two psukim in the Torah back to back. So the Torah gives us our instructions of when you eat your fish, it has to have fins and scales. Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Tes, and Pasuk Yud. The Pasuk Tes reads as follows. Etzet ochlu mikol asher b'mayim, kol asher lo snapir v'kaskeses, b'mayim, b'yamim uv'anachalim osam techilu. So in Pasuk Tes, the Torah says that this is what you're going to be eating in the waters, as long as it has fins and scales, b'mayim, in the water. So you notice, by the way, it says b'mayim twice. And then, b'yamim uv'anachalim osam techilu. And in the oceans and in the rivers. Pasuk Yud. V'chol asher ein lo snapir v'kaskeses, b'yamim uv'anachalim, b'kol sheretz ha'mayim v'kol nefesh ha'chaya asher b'mayim, sheket heim lachem. And if it doesn't have snapir v'kaskeses, then I'm not allowed to eat it. And the first part of the brisa is going to ask a really simple question. Michlal lav atashamehain, or michlal hain atashameh lav. In other words, either pasuk by itself would have done the job. You want to tell me that I have to, in order to eat aquatic animals, it has to have fins and scales? Pasuk tes. You want to tell me that I'm not allowed to eat it if it doesn't have fins and scales? That's pasuk yud. But you know, inferentially, I learn one pasuk from the other. And so why does the Torah have to repeat it twice? I'm sure you can guess the answer. The Bryce is...
Why didn't ask the same question with the behemoth? We have to say because for the laughter, because laughter and so on. So
right.
Why didn't you say the
right.
same way?
Okay. You're right. The Gemara didn't ask that question by animals. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. Mi mashma shenemar chol chiyesh lo shomei ani al tachol chein lo. So if the Torah is telling us that it has to have fins and scales for me to eat it, so inferentially I now know that if it doesn't have fins and scales, I can't eat it. Conversely, mi mashma shenemar al tachol chein lo shomei ani al tachol chiyesh lo. And if you just give me pasuk yud and tell me, well, if it doesn't have fins and scales, I can't eat it. So that means that in order for me to eat it, it has to have fins and scales. So velama shan'an. Why would the Torah repeat? But the Gemara's answer, as you could probably guess, because this is a popular answer of the Gemara, lavor ala ba'aseh velo sa'aseh. Because if all we had was just inferences, so we would not have a formal av and a formal aseh. But once the Torah now gives us a pasuk tes and a pasuk yud. Pasuk tes is the asay, and pasuk yud now is the lav. And obviously, now that we have a formal lav and a formal asay, so therefore, in terms of punishments, you're going to get malchus. In terms of principles like asay dochalos asay, I can't think of an example off the top of my head how that would apply over here. But in other words, but it's now not just an inference, but it's a formal lav and a formal ase. Yeah, in other words, right. If one were to eat an aquatic animal that does not have fins and scales, he'd be violating both the ase and the lav. But if it... Oh, I didn't check up the Monei HaMitzvos, meaning those who count the mitzvos. Do they count it as both a positive and a negative? Okay, that's homework. Homework for me and for you, me or you, one of the two. Right, we talked about, right, the mitzvah to be bodek. Right, we learned that together. The Rambam says that by checking the simanim of a fish is a mitzvah sesei. But that's in terms of bediga simanim. We're talking really about the achila, about the consumption. Okay. Tochle mikol asher b'mayim. Now, here we get to, it's a little bit complicated. And in fact, even before we start with the Gemara, just a brief introduction. We're going to be talking about aquatic animals in bodies of water, and let's now organize our bodies of water. Okay, let's make it nice and simple. One body of water is a natural body of water, like an ocean or like a river. Good. Okay, naturally occurring bodies of water, they are obviously in the ground. They have a source, right? And I understand, right, oceans, it's hard to say what the source of the ocean is, but it's kind of like, it's like the question answers itself, meaning it's the ocean. It simply is a source of water. Rivers also have a source of water as well. And it's in the ground. It flows. Okay, so those are your natural bodies of water, which are clearly articulated in the Torah. I mean, the Torah says, "Bayamim uvanachalim," right? The oceans and the rivers.
Lakes.
Okay, hold on one second. I'll get to the things that are easy. Okay, don't give me the hard stuff yet. Okay, let's go to the other end of the spectrum, and that is water in a kli. Water in a kli is really the other side of the spectrum, meaning so it is not in the ground; it's above ground. It's been drawn. There's no source of that water, and there's no flow in that water. Water in a kli. So those are our two extremes. Now we'll get to the things that are in the middle. Things that are in the middle are things, let's say, for example, like a canal. Okay, like a canal. A canal, the water there is, it's grounded, it's in the ground, it flows, but it doesn't really have a source. As opposed to, let's say, water that's in a cave, or in a ditch, or in a pit that I dug up. So there, it's in the ground, but there's no flow. Okay, so here's what we're going to know for sure, and here's what we're not going to know for sure. In the oceans and in the rivers, so there, for sure, in order to eat any aquatic animal, it's got to have simanim. That's the pasuk in the Torah. Good. In a kli, if I have any aquatic animals germinating inside of a kli, so I say this with a little bit of sarcasm, enjoy. You don't have to have, this part, no sarcasm. You doesn't have to have any of the simanim, it doesn't have to have fins, it doesn't have to have scales, any aquatic growth in a kli. But that means to say it had to have germinated in the kli, so then, right? A fish tank, but a fish tank is not a great example. Because the fish came from an ocean. It came from a river. It had to have germinated inside of the kli. Okay. So, but the halacha is, I'm saying the halacha very clearly. The halacha is, enjoy it. You does not have to have fins and scales. And so that are the clear ends of the spectrum. What is going to be the discussion over here that we're going to have is, what about the middle of the spectrum? What about the canals? What about... right. What about barn sheichin? What about pits and caves? So what are we going to say about any aquatic animals in those water sources? Do they need fins and scales or do they not need it? And so good. So okay, good. So that is our setup for the upcoming discussion. Now we get to see all this inside. Tana Rabbanan. No, we did that already. Sorry. Tochlu. This is a continuation of the Braisa. Mikol asher b'mayim, matam alam shiachol hol v'hiter b'mafurash v'hiter b'sasam. You know, there's a heter in a mafurash, and there's a heter in a sasam. Now, the brayso over here is very vague at this point in time. We don't know what the Mefarish is. We don't know what the Sussum is. But we'll see. So you know when there's a Beferish Heter, so that's only in a Kli. So too when there is a more vague and ambiguous Heter, so too that also would be in a Kli as well. How do I know that if I, let's say, I want to drink now from a ditch, from a cave, a static body of water. So how do I know that? Go ahead, bend down, drink, and no restraint whatsoever. Either maybe some aquatic animals growing in there, no problem. They don't have fins and scales. Once again, I say, no problem. No iser, it's fine. How do I know that? Tamar lamar, tochlu, mikol asher b'mayim. So the Torah says that you can eat it, mikol asher b'mayim, anything that is in water. Now, that is the end of the braisa. I'll tell you what we know for sure. From the braisa, we know for sure that in a kli and in a static body of water, like a boar, like a siach, like a ma'ara, so there is no fins and scales requirement. Anything that germinated inside of the kli or inside the boar, you're allowed to consume, and there is no requirement for fins and scales. We also know that in a natural body of water, like an ocean, like a river, so there is a requirement. We also will see together something like a canal that is in the ground and it flows. There also is going to be a requirement of fins and scales. That's what we know from the braisa. But the braisa, however, was making references that we didn't understand as of yet. Coming up.
Heichen, does that mean only fish?
Wait, just wait 1 second.
Let, anything.
Aquatic animals.
Anything.
Aquatic animals. Heichen hiter bekelim. So now, where's the heter? So, in other words, where's the starting point of the braisa? So it goes like this. Okay, so this is pasuk tes. Now, bayamim v'nachalim, hu dechi islei echol, deleislei lo techol. And so now, here's the reference. Here's the inference. It's not even an inference. It says it pretty clearly in the pasuk, where the Torah says that this is going to be true, that you need fins and scales only by yamim uvanachalim. So it has to be a natural body of water like an ocean and like a river. There, if it has some fins and scales, you eat it, and if it doesn't, you don't eat it. Habikalim, if it's now water in a kli, which is not grounded, there's no flow, it is literally the other side of the spectrum. Afagav deleislei echol. Even though it doesn't have fins and scales, you're allowed to eat it. The Gemara says, interesting. So the Gemara says, look, I understand there's an inference in the pasuk. How about we go in this direction? How about we say that aquatic animals in natural bodies of water, like an ocean and like a river, so there, with kosher signs of fins and scales, you can eat it. In a kli, maybe the inference is, I can never eat it. The Gemara says, lo sakadacha, dechsiv v'chol asher, ein lo snapir v'kaskeses, b'yamim v'nachalim mikol sheretz amayim b'yamim, u'v'nachalim deleislei, lo techal, ha'bekelem afgav deleislei echol. So the Gemara says, no, because I pasuk yud. And pasuk yud tells us very clearly that in yamim v'nachalim, if it doesn't have snapir v'kaskeses, I can't eat it. Which means that, inferentially, clearly, that if we're in another type of body of water, i.e. in a kli, so then I'm allowed to eat it. So Pasuk Yud gives us a clear inference that only in Yam Nachalim does it require fins and scales. In a kli, it does not require fins and scales. The Ema, the Gemara says, okay, I'm fine, but why don't we suggest the following? B'mayim klal, b'yam v'nachalim prat, klalu prat, ein b'chal elamashe b'prat. Yamim nechalim in, ni'itzim v'charitzim lo. So the Gemara says, why don't we understand the pasuk operating with the principle of klal uprat? And why don't we therefore say that the only place that one is allowed to eat fish with fins and scales is only in an ocean and only in a river, but not ni'itzim v'charitzim. Those are canals. Now, again, the nature of a canal is that it's in the ground and the water there is flowing. It doesn't have a source, but still, it's awfully close to a river and an ocean. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why we know that even aquatic animals in canals with fins and scales I'm allowed to eat, because it's not a klal uprat, it's a klal uprat uklal. Bamayim chazer uklal. So the Gemara says we have the word mayim mentioned in the Torah and we have it mentioned twice in the pasuk. It's that tochlu mikol asher bamayim, that's one. Kol asher lo snapir v'kaskes is bamayim, that's two. And bayamim v'nachalim. Now the Gemara says, wait 1 second. What just happened over here? You want to tell me it's klal uprat uklal? I don't understand. The two klalim are next to one another. They are contiguous to each other, and the prat of yamim and nachalim come only after the klal. Hanitre klal dismichla da deninu amravina kedamri b'marava. In Eretz Yisrael, this is how they say it. Kol makum sh'ata motzi shnei klalos osmuchim zelazeh, hatel prat b'neim, v'donam b'chlal prat uklal. So what we're allowed to do, what we're afforded to do, is take the prat that comes after the two klalim and basically cut and paste. Obviously not physically, but the halacha allows us to do this. Take the two examples of yam and nechalim, pick them up, move them now between the two klalim to arrive at a klal uprat uklal. And now the Gemara says, uklal b'mayim, I'm sorry, v'donim b'klal uprat uklal, b'mayim klal, b'yam and nechalim prat, b'mayim chazu klal, klal uprat uklal, yata dan elakena prat. And now what does this allow us to do? Use a traditional klal uprat uklal. Ma prat meforish mayim novim. So what is the, and now we have to now look at our shared characteristics. So what is the characteristic of yamim the yamim and nechalim. So mayim novim. That's the meforash. It flows. I've called mayim novim. So you have flowing water. My rabbi, what are we coming to include? Chritzim v'neitzim. So canals. They're flowing. Li'isura. Umay miyut. And what are we coming to exclude? Boris shichin umaros le'atera. On the other hand, however, a pit, a cave. So those are static bodies of water. The only time that I require fins and scales in order for me to consume the aquatic animals is only by yamim and achalim and things like it, in that they flow. Masha'inkin, when it comes to something like a ditch where it doesn't flow, so therefore, there is no requirement of fins and scales, and you can eat the aquatic animals even without fins and scales. Let's just do but one more sequence. Ve'im ama prat meforish mayim gedel magabe karka. Av kol mayim gedel magabe karka. Look, all we need are shared characteristics. Yamim and nechalim. Can't I make the argument that you know what the shared characteristic is? It's grounded. Water in the ground. So, yamim and nechalim, obviously water in the ground. Ditches and canals, I'm sorry, canals and gutters in the ground. The when I say gutters, I mean in ground gutters. And also caves and ditches in the ground. Umay Rabbi Afila Bar Shechon Amaros Li Sura. Umay Miu Kalim. And maybe the only thing excluded is going to be where the aquatic animal germinates in a kli. So Im Kain Tochelu Mai Ahanile. So the Gemara says, yeah, but then if you're doing that, so then we don't gain anything from the last of the, we don't gain anything from the instruction of, and this tochelu, and this you're going to eat, as if to indicate that we are limiting, or I should say better, expanding the requirement of fins and scales. Meaning fins and scales are not only needed in yam and nechalim, but there's another area where fins and scales are going to be needed, i.e. canals and gutters in which the water is going to flow. Okay, so Adkan, that takes us now to the end of the... So, well, it doesn't really take us to the end of the sugya. It really continues, but we got pretty far into tomorrow's daf. Okay, let's quickly recap. You know, it's funny, in terms of a summary for today, do you know that we learned two rules about klal uprat uklal in terms of today's daf? One on the Amud Aleph is that klal uprat uklal, the first klal and the second klal don't need to be exactly the same to one another. Structurally, they don't have to be exactly the same. As long as they're similar, it could still operate as a klal uprat uklal. The Gemara says this is the source of that, meaning this Gemara, and that is and this is the Shita Rabbi Shmuel. And the second thing we learned today in Eretz Yisrael, they say that if it's klal klal prat, you could take the prat and you can stick it in between the two klalim. In terms of what else we saw today, chagavim, when we talk about grasshoppers. So the four common characteristics of the grasshoppers and More discussion in terms of the comparison between the first and the second brisa of yesterday's daf. And then finally, we went through Rashi and Tosfos today. Chal Gavim do not require Shechita. And Rashi quotes the Bahag, who bases it on a diuk, based at the end of the Perek Yud Aleph, by the progression of the animals that were listed over there. So the Bahag now says that because the grasshoppers come after the fish, and we know fish don't require Shechita, neither do grasshoppers. Tosfos is curious why Rashi quotes the Bahag as opposed to citing many of the Gemaras. Okay. That's the that was side A of today's daf. Side B, we went onto the discussion of the fish. The first point we uncovered is that it has to have fins and scales. Scales not over the duration of its entire life, but as long as at one point during the development of the fish it has scales, that's good. It doesn't matter if it's on the young side or on the older side. And then a lengthy discussion in the Gemara regarding when is there a fins and scales requirement. Yamin Nachalim is explicitly stated in the Torah. What about areas where it's not explicitly stated in the Torah? So if I have aquatic animals germinating inside of a kli, no fins and scales requirement. That part's clear. What about in a ditch and a canal? The Brisa taught us also, no fins and scales required. In fact, the Brisa said graphically that you can just bend down and drink from a ditch. You're going to be ingesting some of the aquatic animals that are growing in there. Enjoy them. I'm sure they're delicious. What about something like a canal where it has the characteristic of an ocean and a river, in that it's in the ground and it flows? So to that, we concluded today that there is a fins and scales requirement, and we know that based on the presentation of the pasuk of klal uprat uklal.